Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, this week is normally, traditionally, what is known as the Detroit Lions Super Bowl. We've heard that throughout our entire lives, but it's different this year. Depending on what you or anybody else thinks of this team, I think most people are in agreement that things are looking up. How good they'll be this year, that's in question. That still could be debated by everybody, but you know, this isn't the high point of the Lions season, at least hopefully. But the draft is on Thursday. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, a lot of national hype. Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network is saying that, like, the Lions are in the best spot of, like, all the NFL teams right now, essentially. Like, they're trending in the right direction. They've built a strong roster. They have a whole lot of draft capital, and so it's good. It's good output, you know, or a good outlook for the future. And I think that's, you know, nationally and locally agreed upon.
Yeah, that it's pretty universal. Even those of us who are the most staunch negatives of on the outlook of the Lions, you know, it's hard to argue that things aren't looking in the right direction. So the draft is on Thursday, but I don't know if it's the curse rearing its ugly head or just something else altogether. Lions were bit by some bad fortune this past week with the suspensions of C.J. Moore, Quintez Cephas, Stanley Berryhill, most importantly, Jameson Williams, all for gambling on team property, a couple of them on NFL games with Jameson Williams and Stanley Berryhill gambling on other sports. You'll talk about those details in a second. You know, they're not odd suspensions. The rules are the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's
go ahead.
Let's get into, let's just lay it out in case, you know, anyone is confused. And then I'm interested in your opinion because I've shared mine in a variety of different mediums so far. But the short answer is that CJ Moore and Quintez Cephas were caught gambling on NFL games. And that is a huge no-no. And so they were indefinitely suspended by the league. If we look at the Calvin Ridley situation, it means they're probably out at least a year, and then they'll have to apply for reinstatement. The Lions immediately cut them. The financial impact from the Lions is pretty minimal. Quintez Cephas carries about $75,000 in a cap hit stemming from his signing bonus. CJ Moore loses all of his guarantees on his salary, which costs him about $1.6 million in guaranteed money. He has a $1.4 million signing bonus that is in question. Right now, it looks like the Lions might be on the hook to take a cap hit for a portion of that. Or maybe they come out free and clear. It's still kind of to be determined because of if it was a rules violation. But CJ Moore is one of the big losers in this battle because he loses a ton of money, $4.5 million over 2 years and $3 million of it guaranteed. It's all pretty much gone. Bad news for these guys' careers, and we'll see what the fallout ends up being a year from now. Now, Jameson and Stanley Berryhill, as you mentioned, they were gambling on NFL premises, like in that there's a variety of meanings to that. It could mean that they were in the Allen Park. It could mean they were in Ford Field. It could mean they were on the bus traveling on a road game. It doesn't specify exactly where, but the rules state that you're not allowed to gamble within any NFL type facility or any NFL medium when you are on the clock, on the NFL clock, right? And those two players gambled on non-NFL games, but on technically company property. And the penalty for that is a 6-game suspension, and that's what they're going to get. Stanley Berryhill doesn't have any guarantees on his contract. So if he makes the 53-man roster, he'll be suspended for the first 6 games. It'll cost him about a third of his non-guaranteed contract, which is around, you know, $300,000. Jameson, it'll cost him around $400,000 to miss his the first 6 games of his career. Those are based on per game checks. But the big news for Jameson is he loses about $6 million in guarantees. Now, there's a little bit of confusion around that because of how things have been worded. But essentially what it means is that the portion of Jameson's contract that was guaranteed is no longer guaranteed. Jameson can still earn that almost $7 million if he plays the totality of his contract, but he's no longer guaranteed to get that money if he were released ahead of time. It also means the Lions would be off the hook if they decided to release him ahead of time for that portion of his contract. He still has other portions of his contract that are guaranteed, like his signing bonus, which would, you know, is still guaranteed for him because it's been paid out, like the Quintez Cephas story. But Jameson basically loses a little bit of guarantees, or well, a lot of guarantees, and a small portion of his cap. It won't really impact the Lions cap one way or another overall. All four of these issues for the Lions, from a cap perspective, it's minimal. They'll gain a little bit here, but they'll lose a little bit here, and some of it's not really settled. So overall, it's not going to have a big impact on the Lions from a cap perspective, but for the players, they really lose out. They're the ones that take the hit, and that's the way the league rules are designed, is that if you break the rules, the players are the ones that suffer the consequences more than the team. So the debate on, you know, the hypocrisy of the league is very much in question. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes down to it, and the way I view this is that the league makes the rules clear. They're on every locker room wall.
Apparently, yeah. They're posted everywhere.
The league makes the rules. It's disseminated to the players. The front office, the Lions organization, is responsible to also deliver this message. Now, we can question whether the Lions delivered this message properly, because as we found out, there were employees that were also fired because of gambling on company property. So maybe the Lions weren't delivering the message properly. But even if they weren't, the league delivers the message and it's written down. And these are things that they need to know. Now, are the rules fair? Because if he's inside the building versus outside the building, like if he's outside the building and off property, it's a legal bet. And if he's not, then it's not. And whether you like the rules or not, and whether you think the rules should be changed, that's very much up for debate. But what's not up for debate is that by the letter of the rule, they broke the rule. They're now suspended for 6 games. And I don't think there's anything that's going to change that.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, like you mentioned the hypocrisy, the fact that you get to go to the Allen Park training facility and you're not out there on the field practicing, but you could sit there and bet all you want on sports games. I don't think Detroit keeps you from doing that. And certainly the Lions can't do anything about you gambling on a company property. But you're right. You're 100% right on the side that, hey, the NFL made these rules. They had their rookie symposium, I'm sure they made it real clear there. It's on all the locker room walls. Everybody saw what happened to Calvin Ridley. So, you know, it's somewhat of a dumb rule, but at the same time, like, it's also dumb to break the rule. You know, it's right. Incredibly dumb to break the rule. So, we're all looking more at Jameson Williams than anything. Although, CJ Moore, it might be the best fake punt man in the NFL. So, like, when you look at last season, CJ Moore had more of an impact on the Lions than Jameson Williams did. Mm-hmm. But, all because way back in 1919, you know, some mobsters paid the Chicago White Sox to throw the World Series, and then Pete Rose was betting on his own team, and then conspiracy theory wise, Michael Jordan was betting on his own team, and, you know, like, and so. Gambling's the worst thing you could do, apparently. You know, look at what some other guys have gotten away with in the league and gotten less suspension than that. But it's all about the sanctity of the game, and you shouldn't be betting. But, you know, it stinks. A lot of people are now questioning, Jameson Williams, like, his now heading into his second season. There's a lot of question marks about him going into the future about, like, well, does this guy even want to play pro football.
I think it's, his maturity, I think, is brought into question frequently. And this situation certainly doesn't help that image for sure.
Yeah, so it's gonna, well, okay, I shouldn't say it's going to, because I think you and I are in agreement on this. How does this affect Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for the Lions?
Yeah, I actually don't think it's going to impact it too much. Because again, we talk about this, I mean, every podcast, it seems like they draft for the future. The Lions draft for the future with the future in mind. And so I think wide receiver long-term was already kind of a minimal need. But I don't think it increases that need, just because Jameson's going to miss six games. In my opinion, the kind of rumor is, or from what we understand, is the Lions knew about this a little bit ahead of time, that there was investigation. Now, they didn't know the results of the investigation until recently, but they knew there was an investigation. So if they anticipated a suspension coming down, it would have made sense for them to make a move. Well, 3 weeks ago, that's when they signed Marvin Jones. And I think that was the move that they decided to make in order to help the team, be able to get through the suspension. But Marvin also offers incredible leadership. And we talked about that in the past as well. So I think there's a massive benefit of signing Marvin Jones beyond the suspension. I think signing Marvin would have happened regardless of the suspension, but this is why you bring him in. If Jameson was injured for six games, this is why you have Marvin, right? But now he's suspended. Yeah. So this is why you have Marvin. And so I think that's the move that the Lions are going to be looking at. I don't think they're going to feel the need to make a free agent signing. I don't think it's going to push them up to where they have to take a receiver at 18 type of thing. That's not in my mindset at all. I still think it's possible they take a receiver on day two. And from a long-term perspective, but Marvin is really the answer for me. A Josh Reynolds, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Marvin Jones with Khalif Raymond is a nice four to go into week one with. So I don't think this changes much draft wise.
You mentioned it a little bit there, but this is my feeling, is it's going to change the perspective of the draft for all of us watching, because mm-hmm. This was new news to us in the last week, by the time the draft comes. But you point out the Lions probably knew about this, and obviously they only found out after they signed CJ Moore, but they've certainly known, I'm guessing, right, for at least a month or so. So yeah, it's not going to affect what they do on Thursday. It's not like this has thrown them into a tizzy and now things are spiraling out of control. Probably far from it. They knew probably had a good feeling it was going to happen. It affects us and the glasses that we'll all be looking at the draft through, but that's about it. So let's, I guess enough about that. Did you want to mention anything else about that?
No, I think, I think it's an unfortunate situation. It's a recoverable situation for the team. It's unfortunate, but moving forward, I think, I think we covered the things we want to cover, and I think we should jump into this NFL draft preview, because that's, I think, what the majority of people are probably going to be tuning into this episode for.
Yeah, and we're not going to do a mock draft here. No mock draft. Eric has been involved in literally hundreds of mock drafts in the last couple months. So, you could check out any one of those with him. We're going to go position by position like we usually do on the show here and talk about who we like on the draft board and how big of a need it is for the Lions at each position. We're going to be referencing the very famous Eric Schlitt Detroit Lions draft board. It's available to all Patreon subscribers, and you just put the new one out on, was it Friday? Or was it yesterday?
No, Saturday night. Okay. Yeah, it's hopefully my goal was to try and get it out ahead of time so that people could kind of follow along with us if they needed to, right? So they can see what we see as we're going through this list, and we can we'll do our best to cover as much of the draft as we can. I'm interested to see if you have any perspective or anything that I changed that you're surprised by, or any questions. And I want to hear your opinion on guys you like, and I want to share mine as well. You remember when I used to do this just for basically like me, you, and Craig? You remember? Yeah. It's evolved since
then. It's morphed quite a bit. But I liked it when it was on the big board.
The physical board?
The physical board.
Yeah. Tape it up on the wall with the Velcro and stuff. Yeah, that.
Yeah, good old, I miss those days. Maybe one day.
The good old
again.
Days. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Well, but this is, I don't know, this is more portable for anybody. You can look at this on your phone if you wanted to.
Certainly.
Whereas I was taking pictures of it with my phone, you know, back in the day, the one that was on the wall. I got to dig, see if I could dig any of those up. Anyhow, all right, forget about that. Quarterback, Jared Goff, Nate Sudfeld are on the roster. You have definitely split up everything into your tiers.
Mm-hmm.
They might take one at six. We have no idea. I don't think they will. I think you're in that boat that you don't think they will, but it wouldn't be shocking if they did.
Yeah, I think I think Bryce Young is, people are really leaning into him being the consensus, yep. Right? It sure seems that way. The pundits are getting a little squirrely, and Vegas is starting to change the odds on what the Houston Texans are going to do, because the rumors are the Texans don't like Stroud that much. They're kind of split in the room on him, and some of them are saying, well, if they're split on C.J. Stroud, maybe they'll go and take Will Anderson because, you're going from or maybe Jalen Carter's in the mix, right? And so maybe they go defense. But at the same time, the recent movement has been the fact that Will Levis is all of a sudden getting a ton of hype. Yeah. And Vegas has a couple of sportsbooks have Levis as the number two, a potential guy to go number two, like the favorite
already.
To go number two.
Isn't that weird?
No. Yeah, this is kind of like, but this is the time of year when we start seeing these little squirrely changes that we don't expect, right? It was around this time last year when Hutchinson wasn't going to be the number one anymore, right? And so. Right.
And that was true, ended up being true.
Right. And so, so if Levis goes number two, it opens the ball game up a little bit, I think, because. Arizona still has a trade out opportunity, and maybe that gets a higher with Stroud being there. They could still take Will Anderson and walk. Then the Colts are still probably in the market for a quarterback. Do they take Stroud, or are they in love with Richardson? Or maybe if Texans go defense, what might they take? Will Levis, because that's been a rumor for a while as well that they've liked Levis. If Stroud's there at six for the Lions, they brought him in for a top 30 visit. They've checked him out. I do think it would create an interesting storyline. I'm still of the mindset that if Stroud's there, that gives them the capital to trade out because someone's going to want to move up for him.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I could also see them
really pull the trigger on him.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it go both ways. For me, Bryce Young's number one, Stroud's number two, and then there's a gap, and then there's Richardson, then there's a gap, then there's Levis. I liked Levis quite a bit. I just think when you break him down more, I don't think he's as ready as those other top two, and I don't think he has the potential of Richardson. So I'm just not as high. For the Lions, though, to sit at six and potentially get Stroud could be very, very tempting for them. And so I do think it's an interesting kind of storyline to keep an eye on. If they don't take Stroud at six, or if Richardson's there, if they don't take Richardson at six, let's say they don't take either of those guys, I'm not sure they take a quarterback at all.
At all? See,
at all.
All right.
Yeah. I
agree with that. What if Hendon Hooker's sitting there in the third round? What if nobody takes him until round three?
I'm okay with passing on Hendon Hooker. I like Hendon Hooker. But I'm also okay with the Lions passing on him. I think he has potential. I don't. There's flaws though that I'm not in love with, and we've talked about those at length. I don't like the idea of drafting a quarterback on day two. It just, I don't know. It throws me off a little bit. I'd understand it if he was there at 81 and they decided to take a gamble on him. I would understand that. Cause there's potential, but there's also like a lot of things he's going to have to overcome in that as well. My kind of assumption right now is that they pass on the day three guys. They try and bring somebody in as a UDFA. And then they go and say, sign Teddy Bridgewater after the draft. And they go in with Goff, Bridgewater, and Sudfeld as their three.
So we'll call all those practice squad guys as undraftable guys on your draft board. Who's the one you'd want?
That's tough.
Your UDFA. Maybe,
yeah, it's tough because like.
Okay, well then, all right. I guess I'll throw names out there.
Please.
Tanner Morgan would be interesting because he's not terrible. You know, like he's
okay.
He would, and that's terrible. That's a terrible synopsis on my
West Coast. No, but he's West Coast guy, right? If it's a scheme, right? Okay.
The other one would be Max Duggan, and that's only because of Brock Purdy. You know, it's like, here's the best Big 12 quarterback, and look what the best Big 12 quarterback did last year. And but you know, he's got comparison to Gardner Minshew there, although he's a spread offense quarterback. You know, all Michigan fans are well aware of that.
Yeah. But,
you know, and part of me, you know, for a while had Stetson Bennett, like this guy, all we've been drilled in about Stetson Bennett is like, he's not very good. And like, he'd always overcome just repeated onslaughts of players coming at him. He's always overcome all that. But then we kind of found out, well, he's like an idiot too, you know, kind of a jerk.
He's also older than Hendon Hooker.
Yeah, they're both 25 though, right? Well, Stetson 25 and 26, a half. And Hendon Hooker's going to be 25 this year. That's another reason not to be looking at Hendon Hooker. But yeah, those day three guys, I would be fine if none of those day three guys ended up, not day three guys, any of those practice squad level type guys ended up with the Lions. Nobody's really standing out in that group.
No, I think Badgett. Jeez, oh, Pete. He's an interesting guy to me, and the Lions were in on him early. He's got a lot of accuracy things. For me, a UDFA that I would want is a UDFA with some legs. Max Duggan, Badgett, or even Malik Cunningham. Those guys.
Cunningham's son.
Is that? I don't think he is. Is he?
No, maybe it's his nephew. Maybe it's nothing. Okay. Maybe it's what I wanted it to be. I would see him out there. Like, that's got to be Randall Cunningham's kid.
He's a kind of a sleeper guy that like not a lot of people talk about, but he's mobile. He runs a spread RPO. And if you look at like the guys that the Lions have brought in as like their kind of like practice squad slash scout team type quarterbacks, they all have some mobility to them, right? Like if you go back and you look at like Steven Montez, Josh Dobbs, even David Blau, they all have some mobility to them. And that's what you want in your scout team guy. So that's what I would be looking for. In like a Cunningham or Duggan type of guy, like the Max Duggan type of guy, somebody with a little bit of mobility that can give you different looks on the scout team.
Malik Cunningham, not related to Randall Cunningham.
Okay.
To my sadness.
All right. You have any more things on the quarterback?
No, not with the quarterback, because quarterback's too difficult. Like, because we look at Anthony Richardson's stats. He only completes like 53% of his passes. Like, well, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. That'll never cut it in the NFL. It's like, well, the supporting cast, Florida was bad, and he's had three different coordinators. And it's like, but you really can't evaluate all that, right? It's going to be up to these. Well,
it's hard.
How is it going to fit in the NFL? Well, we have no idea. You know, and most of the team, you know, almost all the teams don't either. Only half of these guys really, I shouldn't even say half of these guys. It would be like, it's probably only like 40% of these first round quarterbacks over the last 10, 15 years, like kind of hang on to the team they're drafted by and, you know, and make it as starters. Yeah. So it's really the hardest position to evaluate. And that's like, when I sit there and look at these guys, like, well, what were they like in college? You know, did they have a good supporting cast or bad? If it was bad and they played pretty well, it's like, well, this guy might not be bad. But that's, and can they throw the ball hard? Do they have like a cannon? Because if they're noodle arms, like, well, they're definitely not going to make it. But if they can throw the ball, then they have a chance. But that's about it, you know.
What's interesting in the chart, if people don't scroll to the right of my quarterback tab, they might not see the Bill Parcells rules. And those used to be such a big staple in how quarterbacks were determined. And it's, you can see it, there's even less of them at the top, even of guys that qualify under the old Bill Parcells rules, like things like starts and, you know, how many wins, how many, what their completion percentage was, touchdown to interception ratio, etc. Most of the guys that fit the Bill Parcells rules are all like your day three / UDFA type guys. You don't get a lot of them at the top of the drafts anymore.
All right, let's go over to running back. The most interesting thing when it comes to the Lions and their running backs, like, everybody talks now that we have David Montgomery and that's it. Like, everybody's like, DeAndre Swift's no longer on this team. That's what I've noticed. Like,
right.
It's like, well, they got to, you know, if they get Bijan Robinson, he'll pair great with David Montgomery. It's like, wait, what about DeAndre Swift? Is he just gone? You know, but he's not. He's still on the roster. And maybe this is good for DeAndre Swift. This will help. It's like, well, I got to prove it this year. You know, everybody's left me for dead.
I think the injuries and on an expiring deal. And the fact that he's on an expiring deal also has kind of just made people overlook him entirely. But yeah, it could impact how they look at the position. They may look at a guy that doesn't necessarily have to contribute in 2023, but a guy that has enough potential to be a part of the rotation in 2024, right? So one of my guys that I like is Israel Abatakanda from Pittsburgh, right? Like, he's a guy who has enough potential to be RB3 now, but doesn't have to be in the rotation. But with some development and time, he can be in the rotation next year. It's a guy you can get probably in the third, fourth round. And he's got a lot of exciting potential that I think would be worth it if you don't take a running back early. I think he's a guy in that range that people could live with even the guys who are in the mindset that you don't take a running back early. I think you could, you know, pallet taking a guy like Abanacanda on in round three, because he's got kick return potential. He's got third down potential. He's got, you know, home run potential. And so that's my kind of sleeper guy that I really like.
The most, you've been on Abanacanda for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm going to switch away from him a little bit. It's because it's, to me, the most interesting part about the NFL draft is that, you know, like Bryce Young, too short to be a quarterback in the NFL. Jalen Carter doesn't play hard enough to be a top pick. Peter Skoronski, his arms are too short to play offensive tackle. Will Anderson, he's not physically imposing enough, even though he has all this great the statistics of college, like, you know, the premier program.
Yeah.
Bijan Robinson. Everybody's agreed. This guy's going to be great. There's no question about it. Everybody's going to be great, except for he's undraftable in the first 10 picks. Isn't that weird? It's like, here's the one guy everybody agrees on that, like, well, this guy's a home run. You take him, he's going to be great for you. And it's like, well, we'd rather take one of these question marks than this guy. All because, and I, you know, you and I have talked about this for years, how the running back doesn't have as much value as it used to, but you would think, like, I mean, and the bad teams don't need one as, but if there was a halfway decent team, why don't you trade your way up and get yourself Bijan Robinson if you need him?
Well, that's Daniel Jeremiah's approach, right? He talked about Bijan and he said, if you're a good team, if you're a bad team and you take Bijan Robinson, you're going to waste 3 years, his rookie contract. Yeah. Yep. If you're a good team and you take Bijan, then he's got a chance to take you from a playoff contender to a Super Bowl contender because he's that good. And so for a good team, you're not going to waste his snaps. And he, Daniel Jeremiah, believes that Bijan would be a great fit with the Lions because he thinks the Lions are on the precipice of being able to be a playoff team and be able to make this push for a championship in the next few years. And he thinks Bijan is a guy who, his snaps would not be wasted in Detroit, and he could be a guy that helps them go to the next level. So it makes it a very interesting conversation. But then there's all this like data out there that says you can't take them because they only last 5 years. And I don't know. We don't know that.
You know, like Frank Gore played for 17 years. Although, would you take Frank Gore first overall? Like, if you went back in time to Frank Gore's draft, would you take him first overall for that fact? No. And I can't think of who else. And I'm sure you would have taken another running back from their draft because they probably had a better peak than Gore did, even though Gore belongs in the Hall of Fame just for the simple fact it's how long he hung around in the NFL at his position. What about Devin H. Shane? I know you've talked about him before.
I like him. Now, he's not going to be as high on a lot of people's boards. Like some national people that I've looked at don't even have him in their top 10 running backs. I love him, though. I think he's a great fit for what I just talked about. He's a good he can be a good complement back. He's also a home run hitter. He's one of the rare backs that has speed and quickness, and his ability to process is at an elite level. So he's not just a guy that you're going to like. I know he's undersized, so people are going to say he can't run between the tackles, but his ability to process things at such an elite level allows him to go in between the tackles because he has the athleticism and a processing skills to be able to work in a phone booth. He can make the moves. He can read the cuts. He can make the cut, and he has the athleticism to get away from taking a ton of damage. And so I think A-Chain would be a tremendous fit in Detroit. He's not necessarily, I think he can fit any run gapping type scheme. You can run him in the Lions gap power. You could, if they run some outside zone, he's going to work just fine in that. And I think he's a guy you can get probably at value. I love him. I love the fit. I think if you give him some gaps, it just lets him create. And if he gets in space, it could be night, it's over, because he can take it to the house all the, like every time he touches the ball. So I love him. I love him for legit 4.3 speed with some shake and some great vision. That's an incredible compliment to David Montgomery.
All right. So where do you think, if they do take a running, where do you think they're going to end up taking him?
I think from 48 to 81 makes a ton of sense. Anywhere in those three picks, you could take a running back, and I'd be comfortable with that. All right, I could also see him go to day three, but my kind of sweet spot for a balanced guy that can contribute immediately is in that 48 to 81 range.
All right, 48 to 81. Devin Achane, Ty J. Spears, Zach Charbonnet, Tank Bigsby, Israel Abanaconda. We know how you feel about Achane and Abanaconda, so they're of course off the board.
Yep.
Who would you be disappointed if they of those guys if they drafted one of them? That's your 48 to 81 group.
I don't know if I'd be disappointed with any of them. I would be a bit surprised if they took like a guy like Tank Bigsby, or even I might even be a little surprised if they took Charbonnet, just because stylistically they match up a little bit better. Like, I know Charbonnet is a guy that people love, and I he was great at Michigan. I thought he was great at UCLA, but he's a lot like Montgomery. So you don't get a lot of nuance in rotating two backs that are identical, right? Or close to. And so that would surprise me a bit, just because in my mind, they need that speed complement. And I think you can get that with those other guys.
With the suspension of Jameson Williams, although at a completely different position, mm-hmm. does that open the door for the Lions to take Deuce Vaughn late? A guy who could be just a play, a third down back to do some wacky stuff and
maybe. I mean, like, they brought
just
in,
say no, Eric, you can say no.
No. They brought in Keaton Mitchell, who is so similar to Deuce Vaughn. They both have like third down potential. They both could be special teams type contributors. I think the difference is that Mitchell has, again, like that legit 4.3 speed, whereas Vaughn's a little bit lower, but you get more Darren Sproles-esque with Deuce. I like him as a back. I just don't know where he's going to go, because he's 5'5", 179 pounds.
With makes him so interesting.
With a boatload of touches on his body already. But he is, when you watch him with the ball, he is quick as a hiccup, and he can just go. Like, and he may not have that like ticket to the house type speed, but he's hard to hit. I mean, he's so hard to hit. He's got a minimal strike zone to try and like get a tackle on him. And so he makes it really challenging. That's why I think he's intriguing. And I think he's going to go earlier than people think.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I guess from the whole Darren Sproles type thing, somebody might get sucked. Like, this guy's the next Darren Sproles. We might as well take him. So,
mm-hmm.
Interesting. Anybody deep on the list?
Yeah, I think
Evan undrafted guy.
I think Evan Hull is a guy to keep an eye on.
from Northwestern.
Yeah. What I like about Hull is, look, if you watch him at the combine, you saw every time he ran like a drill, he'd take it to the end zone, right? That's the guy I'm talking about, right?
Old school tradition.
Right.
Take and it so, all the way to the end zone every time.
And so he's not incredibly dynamic as a player, but he has the work ethic. He has the mentality. He has the grit, quote unquote grit, right? He has legitimate underrated athleticism. And so there's a combination of things there that could, that make him very interesting. But I do think he's a guy that's in that range where he could get drafted in like the sixth, seventh round, or maybe he goes undrafted. He's a guy who I could see the Lions being interested in, just because he fits all those intangibles that they really look for in a running back, or really in a player in general.
All right, wide receiver group. Now, this group is, like I said, we are taking a look at it differently, because now you lose Quintez Cephas, who we kind of had, I would say, making the roster. You know, the way as a final 53-man roster type guy. Obviously, Jamison Williams is one of the starters. You lose both of those guys. You mentioned the four, Reynolds, Marvin Jones, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Khalif Raymond. There's four.
Mm-hmm.
Do they add five? Do they add six in this draft?
Well, I think they're going to add at least one, right? Like, and I still think that there's value on day two, but to try and grab one, and maybe they grab a second. It might be a little reactionary to grab a second, but I do expect UDFAs to come in, right?
Right.
And which way they go is really up in the air. Losing Cephas and Jamison takes away your guys who can play the X. So you only have Josh Reynolds right now. So adding a player who can play the X on paper looks like a massive need, right? But I don't think they're going to limit themselves to that. I really think that they're going to be looking at pretty much everybody. And I think that includes guys at the top. I think that includes X's. I think it includes Z's and you know, even some slot receivers in certain situations, because you may need to replace a Khalif Raymond or a Josh Reynolds a year from now. And so I do think everything's on the table because we're looking at it long term. So at the top, I don't see them taking a receiver at 18. If they did, I would hope it's Jackson Smith Nigba, right? Like, he's the only one I really think that's qualified to go in the top 18. But I'm not even in love with him at that spot anyways. If they wait until day two, a guy like Josh Downs is like very, you know, considered undersized and like not somebody that like you would think would be a natural fit for the Lions. But I just wrote an article on Saturday about him, talking about how I think he's a terrific fit. I think he can play inside and out. I think he has that kind of a Santana Moss type range. It doesn't hurt that his uncle is Dre Bly, which certainly helps. But what Josh Downs does is that he's so precise in his routes, and he's so quick in his ability to change direction and efficient in his route running, that he's open almost all the time. And what do we talk about with Jared Goff? If he's got a receiver that can get open, he's going to find him. And that's what you get in a guy like Josh Downs. That's what you get in a guy like Smith Nigma. Like, you get these guys that are always open. And that's appealing to me. And I think that will be appealing to the Lions. Now, if you want to go back to the X, Quentin Johnson's a guy that you may have to use pick 18 to go get. But in my opinion, I don't think he's worth 18. I would rather see them take like Cedric Tillman on day two, the Tennessee guy who can play like the XZ. I think Tillman has a lot of upside, he's not as highly talked about as some of the other receivers in this draft, but like he's in the top, he's near the top for me. And he's a guy I think who could start a year from now. And he could be your X for the next couple of years. And I think you'd be comfortable with that because of what he brings to the table. So, you know, other X's on day two, guys like A.T. Perry, AT's a guy that a lot of people like. I think he gives off some like George Pickens vibes, right? So George Pickens is a guy who, like, you know, we saw Georgia last year, right? And he was, you know, he's like this bigger body, but he can go stretch right. the field a little bit, right? We see him in Pittsburgh. And so AT's a guy that a lot of Lions fans are in on and talking about him being, you know, like a guy that they'd love to take. And I totally get that. I get that he would be a guy at like, I don't know, 55 or maybe even 81 that the Lions might be interested in working with.
I'm in agreement that if they pick up a wide receiver, it's got to be later in the draft. I wouldn't call it a wasted pick if they took him early, but it seems it would seem more likely that they take somebody later. And like you said, it's got to be an outside receiver. They have inside receivers. You know, they got to be looking at somebody on the outside.
It's got to be someone that can contribute on the outside, right? Like that's and while a guy like Downs, I think, or even
slot receiver.
Or even Smith Nigma, like those are guys who are primarily slot receivers, but are guys that I think have outside range. And that's what makes them appealing to me, is you need that kind of outside range to your game.
Well, what about, you know, you could even go as far as say, well, look at a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, mm-hmm. who has a lot of positional versatility. He's pretty much capable of doing anything. So it does give them the ability to look at a lot of these different players, you know, who might also be slot receivers that it might not be a total loss bringing that one of them in the many ways you can do St. Brown out of the backfield or whatever.
Yeah, certainly. And like, I don't think, like, if you're looking at when you're looking at slot receivers, you need to look at slot receivers that aren't just in the slot all the time, right? Like if you've got a guy who's like, you know, look at his snaps and it's like, you know, he's only lining up in a slot like 90% of the time, then that's a guy you're probably not saying, you can all of a sudden expand their game at the next level. But at the same time, if you can project it, then, you know, the Khalif Raymond is the ultimate example, right? Because Khalif is a guy who looks like he's built for the slot, yet he has the ability to play some X even. And we saw that 2 years ago. Right. And so if you can get a guy that kind of works like that, like Josh Downs is a great contested catch receiver, even though he's 5'9". That skill set translates to being able to play on the outside in the NFL. And so those are the things that you need to find. Like Jaden Reed, I like Jaden Reed. They've done their homework on Jaden Reed, right? Now I think he can be a Y and a Z. And I think I can do both, right? And so that's why he's appealing. Now, he doesn't give you that kind of – I don't think he can shift over and play the X, but I'm not ruling it necessarily out either. If he's there at 81 or maybe if he slides into day three, I think he's an interesting guy because he has that potential to be able to play at that Z on a regular basis, and he could be a long-term solution for them there. So – I do think all these wide receiver positions are on the table, except for a guy who's like a slot only.
All right, flipping over to the tight end group. Here's where there's a little controversy because some people want to see the Lions take one early, and I don't really think they need to. They got Brock, right? They have James Mitchell. They have
Zylstra.
Yeah, one of the Zylstra brothers.
Yep.
They've got tight ends, I think, and it played really well down the stretch last season. And one could say, well, you know, the Lions are in a different phase now where they can draft, you know, best player available, and it'll just keep improving their team. So what do you think?
I do understand the idea to try and mock them a tight end early. I could even maybe see them go taking one in the first, but it would go against what I would do. And I think it would, and my guess is the Lions aren't leaning that way. At the same time, I don't know if I could rule it out necessarily though either. When you look at like where they've done their homework, it seems to be on guys that are going to be, they think are going to be there like in round two or three, right? They've brought in Darnell Washington for a top 30 visit. They met with Tucker Kraft and Sam Laporte at the combine. They've brought in Luke Schoonmaker. Like these are day three guys or day two guys, right? Washington, I think, is on that fringe. It's really hard to project where Washington's going, but they haven't notably brought in any of the guys that all seem to be consensus first, which is like Michael Mayer or the Kincaid or Musgrave. Those are the guys that like everybody thinks all three of them are going to go in the first. Everyone thinks that. They haven't really, or at least, you know, publicly, we haven't found out that they're like super interested in those guys. So if you're reading the visits, it seems like they're looking at that kind of second wave. But look, this is in this class, that second wave of tight ends might have been a first wave tight end in some other draft classes. They're just, mm-hmm. it's a deep class this year. So I could see them looking at it as, boy, we're getting a value player on day two who maybe should be going a little bit higher. And so I understand the idea of getting a guy who can be a complete tight end and can upgrade our unit as a whole. But I don't think they feel a pressing need like a lot of other national analysts do. But I do think it's somewhere where they could upgrade if they feel like the right player falls to them at the right spot.
All right. And
you got a guy you like?
No, I don't. Not in the tight end group.
I would think Darnell Washington would be your favorite because he's just
a big blocker. Guy. Yeah, huge big blocker. I would want a blocker. If I had my choice, it'll be a blocker because they know the three guys they have on the roster can catch. Yeah. So it would be adding a blocker. But that would be too early to take a blocker. I mean, to me.
Yeah, that's why you need the balance, right? Sleeper guy. Day three, I don't know if you call him a sleeper, but day three guy to keep an eye on is Davis Allen from Clemson. Good run blocker, good pass catcher. He can be a red zone target. I think he's a guy you could find on day three.
See, that's more like it.
Yeah.
That's what I would be thinking about.
Yeah. So if you really want a good blocker, Josh Wiley from Cincy. He's a good blocker as well. You're going to find him on day three too.
All right. Offensive line. There's an interesting one. What one can argue, the Lions are all set on the offensive line. You know, sure. They have their five starters. They
plus Grant, plus one plus more, Grant, right?
Glasgow. Yeah. They have six guys that could potentially start for the team. They have Matt Nelson, who's, you know, seen a lot of snaps. It's a position group that has depth. It's, you know, one of the best position groups on the team. Yet there's been a lot of discussion on this, you know, being a need and a need that could be taken in the first round.
Yeah, here's why, right? When you look at their expiring contracts, and if you want to keep the strongest position group on your roster strong, then this is a position that you're probably going to invest in, right? A year from now, Vaitai, Jonah Jackson, and Graham Glasgow all have contracts that expire. So you're going to need to replace potentially both your guards. But if you want to be able to keep like Jonah's going to get the biggest raise. Vaitai and Glasgow aren't going to get raises, but Jonah's going to. If you want to be able to keep Jonah and you want to be able to keep that Pro Bowl level line, then you're going to need to solidify that right guard spot this year. And you're going to need to draft someone that can contribute pretty quickly and be able to step in on day one. And so for me, okay. So if you look at like, I'm going to pause the draft talk for a second to just talk conceptual contract stuff here. But if you look at their offensive line, their offensive line accounts for about $56 million, which is about 25% of the cap. Yep. Okay.
It's also a quarter of the starters on the field.
Right. Yep. And so it's the strength of the team. You want to invest in that team. When you next year, let's say they pick an offensive lineman at pick 18, add that to the total, it's around 25%. Next year, with those three guards off the books, if you already have the right guard in the fold, okay, because you took that guy at 18. Their new contract total for next year, based on how the market is expected to expand, would be at around 19.8%. So you have about 5% of your cap that you could give to Jonah Jackson to bring him back next year. And if you look at how a year after that, the cap drops again you lose Taylor Decker. But again, you open up about 5% of your salary cap to be able to re-sign him. The year after that, you're gonna have to pay Penei Sewell. But again, the contracts open up where you are going to have another 5 to 7% of increased availability. And so the way that the contracts are all staggered, where it's only one player that's going to be need of a contract for each of the next 5 or 6 years, if you draft a starting right guard this year, you can keep that five, the Decker, Jonah, Ragnow, guy, whoever you pick at 18, and Sewell, if it is great.
According to
you
Eric.
Can keep that five, you can keep those five guys together for the next five seasons. If you want this to be a strength of your team, you take them now and you will have the cap space in each of the next years to be able to re-sign the guys and keep that strength intact. And look, you already have three Pro Bowlers on that offensive line. If you want to keep it together and you want this to be the strength, this is the foundation of your team. You can do it, but in order to keep it, you take a guy now. That way you can develop them and you can make sure that they're ready to play. If they win the job, starting job now, awesome. If they win it a year from now, fine. But if you get that guy in place now, you can solidify this offensive line for half a decade. And we talk about it all the time, Joe. Offensive linemen don't come to the NFL prepared to play. They don't. The way the college system is run and the fact that there's no real developmental league for the offensive linemen to come in and
there's two
and
of them now. But they're not up and running yet.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and look, started. They're also, yeah.
They also the
offensive line play is not their.
They're not getting paid enough to get players that are on that next level. You'd rather, right. If you're a good football player that's not quite NFL caliber, you'd rather be sitting on your couch than playing in one of those leagues just to be healthy when somebody makes the call. Yeah.
It seems like those teams, the offensive linemen on those teams are not great anyways, right? Like there's nobody from the offensive line that's getting called up. So
we'll give it a few years. We'll see. That's going to take time.
Yep. Certainly. But for the now, if the Lions want to make this move, I think they have to take a player who can play at right guard in their first five picks.
All right. I was going to make this easy on you.
Yeah, go.
You're Darnell Wright,
mm-hmm.
Peter Skoronski, Steve Avila, Osiris Torrence. If it's not run of those four guys, you're not, I don't want to say you're not going to be pleased, but you're going to be like, what are they doing here? Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I have really locked into those four. I think you could add Matthew Bergeron as kind of the fifth in that mix for me. He's the left tackle out of Syracuse who has some guard experience. Yeah, he's got just a tick of guard experience, not much. But Bergeron is another guy who
four
I think can be...
Four snaps worth of experience.
Yeah. I thought he had more. But he is a guy who I think has the size, skill set, movement skills that he could kick inside too. So, but yeah, if it's not right, Bergeron, Skorowski, Avila, or Torrence, I am probably going to be disappointed. I'm probably going to be disappointed. Now, if they take a guy like Zavala or from NC State or Anthony Bradford, those are guys that I like, and I think they're probably a year away. Even Cody Mauch, I think, would be a good fit for the Lions, the North Dakota State tackle / guard. I could live with a lot of those guys, and I think even like Emil Ikior from Alabama, right? Like I think he'd be good in a gap scheme. But in my opinion, you've got to land a guy who can contribute in a year. And those five that you mentioned, those are my five favorites. And then after that, I think Zavala and Bradford are kind of my next tier down, guys that I think could be good a year from now, but maybe need a season.
And really after that, like, unless there was really somebody that stood out to you very deep, but it's another one of those positions that's like, well, besides the guys who are way at the top, when you get down there, yeah, it's like, well, I don't know if anybody knows if this guy's going to be any good, you know, like they,
yeah,
the, for the most part, they need to be developed when you're yeah, picking them that late.
Like Sidney Sell from Eastern, mm-hmm, like he's got athletic potential. He's a guy I think could go middle of day three, but he needs to be developed. He's not a guy who we'll see. I mean, could he be a guy who starts a year from now? Maybe he's Logan Stenberg. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to tell, but which is why I don't want to wait. Right. Mm-hmm. But there are some guys, Antonio Maffi from UCLA. That's another late guy that I could see them, taking a shot on. Jordan McFadden out of Clemson, another guy, you know, I think late, if they're picking a guy late, and now they could double up. This is a position they could double up on too, right?
Yep.
Right. Because like I said, they're going to lose all their interior guy, both their guards potentially a year from now. So they may want to add two guys. So it's an interesting position. And while on paper, they look like they're good to go, I could also absolutely see them investing a first round pick and drafting another one later as well, because it's such an important group for this organization's success.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, defensive tackle, one of the biggest areas of need for the Lions, if not the area of biggest need for the Lions. But there's not a lot of talk about it. You know, yeah, it's really Jalen Carter or nothing. It maybe a tiny little bit of Kalijah Kancey talk, but it's not an extremely deep defensive tackle class. And
yeah,
they question the amount of difference. Like, you know, Jalen Carter is a difference maker, but that's really up to him whether or not he's going to be a difference maker on the field. And then as far as the Lions go, do they even draft him because of character issues? They met with them and, you know, maybe he was part of a situation that was, you know, just terrible. But does that mean he's a bad guy? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a big question mark around Jalen. We've talked about him, I think, at length.
Oh, so and I think he also pretended up. He wasn't there, right? So that there's issues there. Go ahead, keep going.
I don't know. He was interviewed
by the cops there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was some question. I don't know.
He wasn't telling internet, the whole truth. But then again, he's a young kid that was in this high-speed race that ended in a car accident. So I don't know. I don't think 80% of 20-year-olds are going to tell the truth, you know, if they were in the same situation.
Right. Right. This is not an uncommon reaction in my book. But yeah, there are questions.
There are questions.
I do think he is, my guess is he's in play. I also wouldn't be surprised if he's not even an option. Like he could go off the board in the top five because he's an impact type player. But man, the stories on him right now that are coming out are all just like terrible. Like they're all just terrible. Yes, I mean, every one of them is just, oh my goodness.
Yep.
And like, the thing is it's Lion season, right? And people and teams are putting out misinformation all the time in order to try and like make, but my goodness, it is overwhelming the amount of negativity around this player right now. So, okay. So I don't know. He is a difference maker. And so I think.
Would you be okay if they took him? I'd be fine.
I'd be fine. Yeah.
Interestingly enough.
Yeah. I wouldn't. It wouldn't bother me. But I think, I don't know how much we can believe about all this misinformation. And I think a lot of it's getting overblown because he's a top player, or considered a top player, right? And so Carter is that impact defensive tackle. After him, Kiancey's a guy that everybody loves.
Because he went to the same school as Aaron Donald, and of a similar size.
Great first step. I do think he's not strong enough against the run for what the Lions would want, especially at 18. A lot of people like him though. And a lot of people I trust like him, and I'm just not there. I don't know why I can't get there the way that everybody else is, but I'm just not. You know, Brice is another guy that I like, but again, I don't know. I don't know if I like him at 18.
You didn't like him early on in this process.
Yeah.
You can change your opinion. That's fine.
It's been up and down, right? Like, I liked him coming into the year. I thought he had hiccups during the year, but then I understand, you know, there's understandable. I've been really up and down on Brice. I have him above Kiancey. I mean, I think he's a better fit for what the Lions look for. But those two guys are kind of in that next tier. I don't have a really great feeling on either of them. When you get into like my tier three and you're looking at nose tackles like Mazi Smith and Keanu Benton, those guys I feel a lot more comfortable with. But I also think those guys are day two guys. And so I don't think they're in the conversation at 18, but I could definitely see them going at 48. I do think Mazi could actually go even ahead of 48. I don't think Benton will, is my guess. You know, I still think Ika is a really good fit if you're looking at it for a nose tackle. Yeah, I mean, look, he's big and he can move people. And then I even like Adewabare from Northwestern. Zach Pickens is a guy who I think you could talk me into at 81. Even Gervin Dexter, I think his athleticism, but I don't know. Dexter, I've got some questions about. Pickens, I've got some questions about. Adewabare, you're kind of switching by trying to push him inside. Ika, I wish he had a better step than kind of what he's shown. But again, I like the body. I like the body type. I like the physicality. I like the people movers that he has. So I wouldn't be upset with him. But after like that, those nine, right? Like, it gets really kind of questionable. A guy like Jared Clark that people really like. From Coastal Carolina, he's big, he's athletic, he's got some pass rushing skills. He also had spinal fusion surgery a couple years ago, and so that's a huge question, especially at his size, right? And so there's some guys like later that interest me. Coburn from Texas is an interesting guy. You know, I people really like Jacqueline Roy a little bit more than I do. So he's a kind of another name to maybe keep an eye on. But for me, I think your best value, like the guy, if you're not taking Carter, the best value is really in Mazi and Benton. I think those are really, that's really the sweet spot with those guys.
Not Ika.
Second round. I think, well, if Ika's there at 81, I think he could be good value, but I don't know if I like Ika at like 55.
Okay.
Right. Maybe. I mean, I could maybe be talked into it and liking him with that second round pick. But I just think Mazi and Benton are a little bit more clean than Ika. And I think they have a little bit more range, which is why I kind of like, I like their footwork, like their hands a little bit more. Whereas Ika's just like a you know, he just bodies people, like, which is fun to watch.
Big clog.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Clog in the system.
And I'm fine. And I'm fine with that as well. I'm just not sure. Think of it this way. Aleem McNeil went in round three, right? And that's kind of like what I'm looking at. Aleem was pick 72. I don't think Ika's as good as Aleem. I don't even know if Mazi and Benton are, but I could understand in this class with this level of player that you could take one of those guys in the second round and be comfortable with it.
All right. Going to the defensive end spot. And we got the two great players up at the top. Well, one who's had a lot of great production and the other one that projects to have great production. It's Will Anderson, Tyree Wilson. Both have been linked to the Lions in a lot of mock drafts, but Will Anderson, not as much because the consensus is he's going to go well before six, so we won't be seeing Will Anderson. But maybe Tyree Wilson, he's now getting pushed up to where it seems like he's creeping into the top five too.
Right, right.
And Wilson might be a better fit in stopping the run, which might be something the Lions be more interested in. It's a position where the Lions have a lot of guys, but you wouldn't be surprised if they took another one up high because of
yeah
the these guys, the potential that these guys have.
for me, Anderson's statistical production translates when you have 3 years of statistical production in the SEC. That translates in the NFL like immediately. Like, it's very rare to find a guy who's that consistently productive in a elite conference and not be able to translate that over. Will Anderson's one of the safest picks in this class. He probably is, man, it might even be the safest. And if you have a chance, if he slides to six for some reason, you run to the podium and you get a phone call from the league about turning your pick in too early again, because he's that good of a player. There's a lot of hype around Wilson. Again, like you said, it's all projection, Ezekiel Ansah type projection. Is that worth it? Maybe. If you can get that.
Yeah, Ziggy was until he got hurt. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get 10 sacks a year out of Wilson, then that's worth it, right? Yep. I'm just not as sold that you're going to necessarily, especially in the Lions scheme. Now, maybe they alter the scheme if they bring him in, but he remains a guy that a lot of the local beat writers think is in play. And so it's going to be something to watch. And if he goes up and he goes higher, well, then maybe that pushes somebody else down, because there's rumored that some teams like Wilson higher than Anderson, which is a little bit surprising to me. And I'm not one of those guys, but I get you're drafting production versus traits, right? And Wilson is the guy with the traits. And I, for me, and for what I think this organization is, I think they prefer the production over the traits in this scenario. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to go deeper. I think
yeah, please.
Everybody's pretty well schooled on those two guys. Lucas Van Ness has made a lot of movement lately because, you know, he scores well, but he wasn't even a starter. Right. He was at least a part-time starter at Iowa. Then there's Miles Murphy, who we've seen some stuff, some mock drafts having the Lions taking him at 18. And what about even deeper, like a guy like Zach Harrison, you know, closed defensive end, played at Ohio State, has a little feel of Sam Hubbard about him.
He does. I'm not as sold on Harrison in particular, but he is a guy that I could see going like in that third round range. He definitely has the length that the Lions and almost every team seems to look for. So that's going to be really appealing. I just wish he had a great senior year. Like, he was great this past season. I just wish he was more productive in seasons prior. Previous. Right? Because he's been a starter for a while. And so, I wish he had better tape before 2022. But the intangibles are all there, right? If you like closed ends, there's going to be a handful of them, and there's probably going to be closed ends in round. There's going to be closed ends basically in every round, right?
At 18, would you take Lucas Van Ness at 18?
I think at 18, I'd be a lot more comfortable with Van Ness at 18 than I would at six, like some people have suggested.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. That's high.
Oh, they wanted to throw out something different. Maybe, at this point to stand maybe. Out.
But Van Ness, Murphy, if either of those guys go at 18, I would understand it. Probably would not be my choice, but like if they ended up taking like Carter at six and then Van Ness at 18, I mean, I'd get that. I would understand those decisions. Right. But I do like the idea, like, okay, a guy like Yaya Diaby, who I actually have ranked ahead of Zach Harrison, but I think might get drafted after okay. Zach Harrison. Right. I like that guy a lot. Like, I think he has the upside to play open. I think he has some power to play closed. He has some flexibility to come in and do some stuff, but you might be able to find him a little bit later in the draft. Right. And maybe Harrison slides a little bit more too. I just think Harrison's the size, the length, the athleticism, I think that's, people are going to gamble on that. Right. And then if you want to move away from like your traditional like closed or open ends, there's a bunch of pass rushing like Sam linebackers that could be that fit into the James Houston slash Julian Aguara type mold. And I've talked, and I think we've talked about this even. If they want to take away one of their off the ball linebackers that only played special teams and make and add a pass rushing outside linebacker that mostly plays special teams, that's fine with me. Instead of having six off the ball, if you end up with like three pass rushing linebackers and four or five off the ball, I'm fine with that, right? So they've actually done a lot of homework on day three pass rushing outside linebackers. So those are the guys that kind of interest me as well. So you're always going to be like in the mix for defensive ends or edge rushers. I think at all points, you're going to have these talks about taking a guy at the top, but I think you're also going to have options on guys like late. One of my favorites for that role, for that pass rushing linebacker role, is Yasir Abdullah, another Louisville guy. I think he has James Houston written all over him. A guy like KJ Henry from Clemson is very similar to what Julian gives you. Nick Hampton from Appalachian State's a guy that the Lions have shown some interest in. He fits in that mold as well. And then you even have like Andre Carter, the kid from Army, who's, I think, the Lions were in on early in the season as well. And you've got local kids too, right? You've got like Jose Ramirez from Eastern Michigan, who fits in that role. I think Thomas Income is probably from Central, is you're going to put him on his hand in the dirt a little bit more. But he's another local kid. And then Caleb Murphy from Ferris State, another local kid who I think can play open, can play like a stand up. The Caleb Murphy's production at Ferris was like obscene.
Off
like
the charts.
Yeah, it was. But like when he went to the Senior Bowl, the Shrine game, you saw, you know, he got exposed a little bit. He didn't quite have the power that he needed to, but he's a guy who they've met with. He's a guy who I think could interest them, you know, in the later rounds. And so bunch of local kids that could make sense, bunch of high profile guys that could make sense at the top. And then really everyone in between. It's a deep, deep edge group this year.
Do you think they walk away with the defensive end in this draft?
I think they, in that, some edge rusher, in some capacity, I think they walk out with at least one. This is another position they could potentially double dip on, but it would make a lot of sense that they walk out of here with somebody to add some more depth, especially for the future, you know, in this, with one of their nine picks. And really it could be anywhere from six all the way to their last pick.
You mentioned Caleb Murphy and his stats that jumped off the board. Just for anybody who doesn't know, he had 25 and a half sacks last year. That's video game type numbers.
Yeah. And like his tackles for loss are like way up there. Like in the last couple of years, it's like 60, I think, total over the last couple of years or something like that. It's impressive.
All right, flipping over to another area of need, maybe at the top of areas of need for the Lions is off the ball linebacker. There's three or four guys that are sitting in the range of going in the top two rounds, but it's not a deep position as in compared to other drafts. And
oh yeah,
might not be one that the Lions should be looking to go after early on in the draft.
Yeah, there's probably three guys that go in four guys that go in the top 100 for me, and that's about it. That's not a great sampling. I think if any of them go in the first round, it's probably Drew Sanders, unless somebody just looks at Jack Campbell's, you know, overall athleticism and just falls in love with them. I think Sanders is the guy who's the most ready. Campbell's a guy who can be productive, but he just doesn't live up to it. If I'm the Lions, I'm actually the guy that I might be looking at the hardest is Trenton Simpson, the Clemson guy who can, you know, He can shift out over the slot. He can play both the off the ball spots. He can be a pass rusher at times. He just is kind of that do it all
jack type of all linebacker. Trades.
Yeah, and so like that's I actually like him, but again, I don't know if they're going to want to pay the cost to go get one of these guys. Henley's the fourth guy in this conversation here, cover guy, but in my opinion, you know, if you. I don't know if he, maybe they take him in the third round, you know, I don't know if he makes it, but from what the Lions are doing, I don't see them using one because they have their top three guys already. And I'm not sure using a top 100 pick or top 81 pick on any of these four guys really takes it to the next level because of, you know, how things are kind of set up. Like I don't see an opportunity to start. I don't think they're ready to give up on Derek Barnes. And so Simpson, like I said, intrigues me because it's a role that the Lions don't really have. So he would be stepping into, you know, a new type of role, but also Chauncey Gardner kind of takes some of that whole box, you know, defender slash safe, you know, slot role out of the mix, which makes Simpson, you know, less of a that to have a Simpson type guy less of a need. So I don't know. I feel like it's a position where they could wait, but I do think it's a position that they're going to want to address because after, you know, your three starters, you have Jalen Reeves-Maybin and Anthony Pittman, and that's it. You probably want to add another guy that can compete, whether it's for that sixth linebacker role or maybe a higher spot on the depth chart. And also maybe on special teams. Cause like I mentioned before, they used six guys on every game. They used six guys. And so maybe they need to find that sixth guy in this draft.
I was a fan of Jack Campbell, like when this whole thing started, but now I'm not, now that he's performing so well in all the off season stuff, it's like, well, I don't think they should go get him now. You know,
you know what?
There's no value there now.
He just doesn't play up to his athleticism, and right, his athleticism right. is really driving his stock up.
Yeah. Whereas like at Iowa, he's a pretty good linebacker, but he wasn't, you know, dominating all over the place, but
right
now he's working out and it's like, he's dominating all over the place.
Right.
Show that in the game. Yeah.
Right. Like he's a production monster. Like he's going to have 10 tackles a game.
Well, but that's a traditional middle linebacker, you know, like,
right.
You know, not necessarily a difference maker.
Right. And he lacks, I think, some of the intangibles that I think we're looking for.
Which is what we desperately need.
Right.
A lot of instinct, you know.
Right. Which is why I like a guy like Trenton Simpson. I just don't know if they'd pay the price for him. So if you're going to day three, Demarion Overshown, he's a guy who can be this kind of hybrid player that can line up in a lot of different spots for you. He's one of the guys I've liked for a couple years now. But my favorite guy on day three is Cam Jones from Indiana. Downhill run defender, plays like a missile. He's got mic capabilities. In my opinion, he can grow into a Nick Bolden type of role where he could eventually become a starter down the line. 3-year captain at Indiana. That's huge. And he can... He's a day one special teams starter, might even be day one special teams captain. That's the type of guy that he is. You're going to get him in the later rounds. And he's a guy who I think fans would fall in love with. One of my favorite players who I think is massively underrated.
I was going to ask, and I didn't know if you'd have any good answers for that as far as, well, they're going to need more special teamers coming from the defensive side of the ball. And are they going to be drafting guys like that? I know the idea of the draft is like to be drafting guys that you'd see as potential starters, you know,
yeah. But
it, like if you do take guys, they're going to need to play on special teams, especially when you pick them later.
Another guy to keep in mind is Isaiah Moore from NC State, another 3-time captain. He's got a lot of those late round intangibles that you would like where you can bring him in day one contributor on special teams.
Does the Campbell regime or Campbell Holmes regime put as much on the idea of being a multi-year captain as the Patricia Quinn regime did? Quinn Trisha, if you would?
There's a lot of guys that were captains that they've drafted so far. And you tend to find that like the current regime loves character, and you tend to find that the character guys were also captains. That tends to be how it works. So yeah, you end up finding a lot of these guys like Cam Jones is a high character player, like, and he loves football. And so there's just intangibles galore that fit the Matt Patricia, or the, geez, you brought him up, so he's in my head, that fit the Dan Campbell style of play.
All right, flip it over to the cornerback position, which is a position of need, even though the Lions addressed it heavily in the offseason, although they did trade away Jeff Okuda not too long ago. The top five guys have definitely all received some sort of connection to the Lions as you look through different mock drafts and, you know, information and right.
Yeah.
Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, Deontay Banks, Joey Porter Jr., Emmanuel Forbes, all those guys, they've bubbled up as names that were attached to the Lions.
Yeah, and they've met with three of those guys, right? Witherspoon, they sent a collection of people out to his pro day, both Dre Bly and
Kirby
Brian Duker.
Joseph vouches for him.
There's a lot to like about Witherspoon. One of my favorites. I think he is, he's a guy who comes in, could win the starting job and play opposite of Sutton. Everything that Dan Campbell wants, again, everything that Aaron Glenn wants, he's going to remind him of himself. He's going to remind Aaron Glenn of himself. Witherspoon is a big hitter. He's lives on his instincts. He understands angles. He understands leverage. He can be sticky. Like every prospect, there's going to be flaws and people are going to nitpick on him. They're going to say he gets too handsy but it's part of playing corner. There's going to be things he needs to clean up, and he's not going to be flawless, but he's close to flawless. In my opinion, there's so many things that are great about him. He's a Denzel Ward type of Jair Alexander type of guy that comes in, could start on day one and you just run away with them. And he's your cornerback one. A year from now, right? Like, he's that good. Gonzalez is the prototype, right? He's got sub 4.4 speed. He's over 6'2". He's 200 pounds. He's got eyes for the ball. He's going to remind people of Darius Slay. And he's going to be in that elite level of draft pick conversation as well.
He's also David Blau's brother-in-law.
Yep. The sprinter
Lions connection.
The sprinter genes are in his family because his sister Melissa is an Olympian, and it shows. Gonzalez is that he's got sprinter speed and great length. If they wait to 18, I think Deontay Banks is that number three corner for me, and he's not going to be number three on the consensus board. He's not going to be number three on other teams' boards. A lot of teams are going to have Porter higher, and I get that. In my opinion, though, Banks is a better fit. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's more physical, he can be stickier, he's willing to mix it up. Porter, in my opinion, is really good. He's a good coverage guy, but he allows too many free releases, which the Lions don't like, and he's not as nose for the ball. And there's just other things, even though he again has got that prototype athleticism that teams look for. I still have Banks a little higher because of his physicality. Forbes is an interesting guy because the ball finds him. And when the ball finds him, he finds the end zone. It's his pick to touchdown rate is insane. Big issue with Forbes is he is skinny, 166 pounds. At 6'1" is skinny. He's got those legs that you're like, I don't know if he can put weight on. Like, that's just kind of what his frame is. And so his hype is way up, and he's interesting to me. And the Lions have met with him a couple of times. And I think that there's no doubting his nose for the ball, but I'm much more worried about his frame than I am like Devin Witherspoon's, which a lot of people seem to be concerned about as well. Cause he's, you know, Witherspoon's only
15 pounds heavier.
Yeah. Yeah. So Forbes is that guy. After Forbes, it gets a little bit interesting because you've got, you know, Ringo, who I think is more of like a cover three type guy, more like an Xavier Rhodes. Like Xavier Rhodes would never fit in the Lions scheme, yet he fits other schemes and he can be a productive player. I think Ringo's got that same kind of mentality. His ability to play man kind of got exposed, but I think he can be a good like cover three type guy. And that's, there's several teams that run that in the league that are, that he, I think, will fit on great. I do like DJ Turner. I really like DJ Turner's 4.26 40 time. That, you know, that's really appealing to me. Question is, does he have the size to stay on the outside? Is he going to be pushed inside? If he is pushed inside, that's, you know, that's something he did at Michigan. But I think, you know, the Lions are probably looking for a guy that can play outside a little bit easier. And there's still other guys that can do that, like Cam Smith from South Carolina can do that. Julius Brents is a name that people are like, that's really flying up there. I even heard his name whispered as a potential, like, could be a guy who sneaks into the first round type of thing. I'm not that high on him because I think he's got to prove a little bit more to me in his man skills. But at 6'3", 200 pounds with 34-inch arms and good explosion, like, that's going to appeal to a lot of teams. And so, you know, Brents is a name to keep an eye on who, you know, could be a name that comes off the board earlier than you think. Now, those are your big guys. Those are, if you want a guy who can contribute this year or compete to contribute this year, potentially start next year, that's your guys. That's your group right there. If you go past that, you're getting now guys that are a little bit more, they're a little bit more wild cards, or maybe they're dealing with injuries or a variety of different things, but there's still other guys like that you might be able to find on day three with potential. Ja'Cory Bennett is one of my favorites, the kid out of Maryland. Great combination of athleticism. Garrett Williams from Syracuse. Remember, they went to Syracuse defensive backfield a couple of years ago with Iffy. And so they could be looking at Williams as well. He has an ACL issue, tore his ACL early in the season. And so he's a guy that, you know, if you can get him at value, kind of like you did with James Mitchell last year, then maybe that he's a guy that could be worth it. Darius Rush, like Julius Brents, those were guys that Sean Dion Hamilton coached at the Senior Bowl. So you got to give, you know, and Rush is a little bit of a sleeper guy as well. 6'2", 200, good impressed man. So again, he's a guy where you're like, hey, you know, I wonder if he could sneak up to 81 or something like that. Another sleeper guy is Corey Trice from Purdue. 6'3", 206, good press man. People have comped him to Richard Sherman a little bit, which is interesting to me. And I think it's
wise.
Yeah, and I think he was former receiver, right? And so I think that kind of all kind of blends together. Rezjon Wright, Kai Blue Kelly, the kid from Stanford, we've talked about who kind of fell off this year, but he's a guy that was on our radar early in the season. Rezjon Wright, I don't want to gloss over him too quickly. He's got some like PJ Williams. If you remember, PJ Williams was the guy who was like the hybrid defensive back for Aaron Glenn in New Orleans. Okay. He was kind of like, he had PJ Williams and he had Chauncey Gardner, and those two guys he used to platoon all over the field. And you kind of get some of those vibes from Rezjon Wright. So he's again, another guy, if he's there on day three, I'm keeping an eye on him as a potential guy that, you know, interests me. A lot of people really like Riley Moss from Iowa. I wanted him to prove it a little bit more to me but I know he's got a huge fan base. And
I'm sure. What about sure Travius Hodges Tomlinson? Thorpe Award winner, yeah, undersized,
yeah. But way undersized, nickel only. Yeah. The thing is, I think he's nickel only at the next level. And I would, and if you take him, maybe it's just subconsciously, I don't like that fit as well because they have Chase Lucas and I'm such a Chase Lucas fan.
You want to see Chase make it.
But that's essentially Chase's role, right? So if you get Hodges Tomlinson, that's kind of saying that you're not as confident in Chase. And I don't know if they're at that spot because I think Chase showed me a lot last offseason before he was injured.
All right, last position group, safeties. Brian Branch leads the way. He's a safety. He's also, he could be a slot corner, slot defensive back type guy.
Yeah, a lot of the guys at the top.
Lions talk about him.
Yeah, a lot of guys at the top of my list are going to be guys that are in those hybrid type roles, right? Like Branch can be Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, right? Or CJ, I guess is what he likes to be called now, right? Branch is that guy. If they didn't get Gardner-Johnson, I would be heavily pushing for Branch at 18 like that. But now that they have Johnson, I wonder if Branch is still as high on their list. Talent is there. Talent's there that if they took Branch at 18, I wouldn't blink because I think he's that good of a player. Hard for him to find a field in year one, but he is extraordinarily talented that you would find a spot to use him. After Branch, my next guy, my number two, is Jartavius Martin. That's a guy who I think not a lot of people are going to put it at their number two safety.
Except for Kirby Joseph, although he'd have him as his number one safety.
I love him. I love Martin. Like, if he's there at 81 and you take him, great. I actually like him so much, I would be okay if they took him in the second round. Like, that's how much I like him. He's a guy who... he's Chauncey Gardner, like he's Gardner Johnson, right? Like he's exactly like that. He can do so many cool things. His 1.44 10-yard split is lunacy. Like that's insane. To give you an example, Brian Branch's 10-yard split was 1.56. There's really only one other guy who's in like close to like 1.5. Who's 1.51, and that's Jamie Robinson, who we'll talk about in a second. But most guys are in that like 1.55 range for the safeties. He ran a 1.4. Jartavius Martin ran a 1.44 10-yard split. Foot quickness, like and it shows. Like it translates onto the field. No surprise, he runs a 4.4 in the 40. He has incredible explosion, both vert and broad. He is a dynamic player that I think can do so many different things. And he's like Branch. If you get him on your roster, you just find a way to make it work, right? So those two guys, 1-2, boom, boom. I mentioned Jamie Robinson. He's another guy that I think is this slot guy, like a slot defensive back hybrid. Now, he's probably going to be there at like 81, or maybe you're hoping he slides a little bit, but he's a guy I think that can fill that same role. So, like, if you want one of these hybrid defensive backs in the first, you want Branch. If you want one in the second or third, you want Martin. If you want one in that's for third or maybe later, you want Jamie Robinson is the guy you want to peg. And so Robinson is another guy who's physical, and if he's going to hit you, and he's going to want you to know that he's the one who hit you, and he's going to let you know. So he's got, you know, his comp was Antoine Winfield, right? Like he's got some good range. He's got some good slot ability. I like him in the top 100, but you may not need to take him in the top one. You may get him a little bit later. If you look outside, like, and there's a couple other guys, Sidney Brown, Christopher Smith, those guys are slot weapons as well. But if you get outside of like the slot weapons and you start looking at your like bigger defensive backs who can play more hybrid roles, like a guy who can play more like a linebacker at the linebacker level, Antonio Johnson, Marte Mapu from Sacramento State, these are bigger safeties who have like those kind of Jeremy Chinn type vibes where you can one play, you can line them up at free. The next play, you can line them up in the slot. The next play, you can line them up on the edge is almost like a pass rusher where you can like move these kind of guys around. And those types of guys appeal to me as well. Jordan Battle from Alabama. He's like a traditional single high cover two type safety, and he's going to go really high. I don't see a role in Detroit for him. He's going to be safety two on a lot of teams' boards. But for me, I don't see where he fits in. If you're going to add a safety, I think the Lions would be apt to add a safety who can be this kind of hybrid guy as opposed to a traditional safety. They have traditional safeties. You have two traditional safeties in Tracy and Kirby, and you're developing one in Iffy. And I don't know if you need to spend a high draft pick on that same kind of traditional type player.
What about, so the getting rid of CJ Moore, right? You know, that affects the team once again, special teams wise. Any of these guys stand out to you there?
Daniel Scott from California is a captain. He's comfortable in single high, which means he's going to be able, a good backup. He's got elite athleticism, tons of special teams experience. He can play as a gunner. I think he can play in the PP role. He's a guy who can come in and essentially give you what you were getting out of CJ Moore, and you're probably going to get him in like the fifth, sixth round.
All right. Not a lot of local guys on the list. I'm just going through and.
Yeah, not a lot.
Really bad here. They beat all these guys. Like, this is a weakness for every team. The defensive backfield, corners and safeties is a weakness for every team. You know, every team's going to be looking to add one of the guys from these two lists. And I don't know. We'll get to see all of them. I don't know. I don't have any deep thoughts about any of them, except for it would be interesting if they found a way to draft Weatherspoon, Martin, and Brown, and then also enter, and it's just an entire Illinois defensive backfield.
You know what's crazy? And I think, you know, like, I giggle, and I think there's probably a bunch of people at home that are good, but that Illinois secondary, when those guys were back there, was number one in the country. Like, and I know it's Illinois, and people are like,
Smith too.
Yeah, like, this, those four guys, the Martin, Brown, Kirby, Witherspoon, those four guys, they were the number one secondary in the country 2 years ago. And I think I don't know if they were number one last year without Kirby, but I think they were pretty close with because Bielema. The other three, they were right up there. But yeah, even with Bielema, right? And so I know we kind of like look at Illinois and we're like, Illinois, yeah, really? Illinois. We want all these guys from Illinois? They were fantastic, fantastic. And that's why all of these guys are being looked at. Like, all four of them could be top 100 picks when it's all said and done, right? Like, that's how good they are, and how Lovey, you know, landed and developed all of them is a big tip of the cap to Lovey there, because he did a nice job.
Well, I did say that safety was the last position group. That's not true. We have specialists, but I don't think the Lions will be looking to draft anybody from there. And we know Jake Moody, Chad Ryland used to be at Eastern. You know, we know Bryce Behringer. We know Brad Robbins. Like, we're aware of the guys at the top. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's a bunch of local guys. And I think there's a lot of fans that really, really would love to see Moody.
I would agree. I wouldn't, you know, if they drafted him, I wouldn't care. That would be fine with me. except for the fact it's like, I don't know if you really need to waste draft picks on kickers. I was only four of the last 13 picked, like, have remained with the team that drafted them for, you know, X amount of years. And it's like, well, I don't know. Even though some of the other ones did eventually make it, but they made it somewhere else. So it's like, I don't know if there's real value there or anything.
Now, they have been looking at kickers, and I know they were looking at kickers at the All-Star games. So I kind of do expect them to add a kicker, but it could easily just be an UDFA, right? Now, if it's going to be UDFA, then you're anyone who's hoping for Jake Moody, you know, that he's going to get drafted. But if another guy slides, you know, I fully expect them to target a UDFA to try and bring in, you know, to give some competition to Michael Badgley.
Right. Yeah. But and who knows who that's going to be. So
right.
We'll leave it at that. So that's it. That's our pre draft, you know, that's our final look at the pre-draft breakdown. One question for you, Eric, do you think the Lions will be drafting at 6 and 18?
I would not be surprised if they move off of one of those spots, right? If there's a scenario that comes up where they take a guy at 6 and then Devin Witherspoon slides to 12, I could see them packaging and trying to go up and get him, right? If they landed like Jalen Carter at 6 and then Witherspoon slides to 12 and they traded up to 12 to get Witherspoon, I would be dancing in the streets, right? Because I'd be extremely happy with that. So I could see them moving up from 18 if a guy that they determine is elite slides. At the same time, if a guy like CJ Stroud is there and their number six becomes valuable, I could see them trying to trade back as well and try and accumulate picks, especially if you could get a high draft pick in next year's draft. So if I had to place a bet on if they were going to pick at 6 and 18 or not, I would take the not. I would say I wouldn't be surprised if they move off one of those spots.
And I won't talk about the second or third round, definitely beyond, like, anything fourth or later. Like, yeah, they're definitely going to trade one or two of those picks because that's just what everybody does. Even the second or third rounders, it seems like everybody's moving their picks now later in the draft. But that's what I thought too. You know, like we're all preparing for 6 and 18, but it's like, oh, yeah, I might not even draft at 6 and 18. We'll see.
From a selfish standpoint, whenever you have two picks that are within like 10, 12 of each other, it makes it hard to cover.
Here we go.
No, this is me being selfish. I said, no, I know. Yeah,
you did preface it. Yeah, I get it.
So like 6 and 18, it's okay. That's doable because of the length of the picks, right? But like on in round two, they've got two picks real close to each other
with only in 5 minutes in between.
Right. And then in round five, they got two picks close to each other. In round six, they got two picks real close to each other. Well, right.
They're going
to
trade them. They're going to trade around.
That's kind of my hope because I don't like covering picks so close together. But like, I don't want to complain too much because there are some teams. I was looking at it when I was building the chart yesterday. If you look at the picks and needs chart that I developed.
Yeah. This is the first here.
It's a new one. Some of these teams have picks so close together, it's got to be unnerving to cover. Like, for example, at the end of round three, the 49ers have picks 99, 101, and 102. Trying to cover three out of four picks would be a nightmare as a writer. At the end of round five, beginning of round six, the Rams have six picks in 20. Or 20 or 25. Six. Trying to cover six in 20.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's gotta be terrible.
Oh no, it's to cover. Sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, like, my goodness. So, you know, there's a bunch of other writers that I'm sure are in just as bad of a boat. But I didn't feel as bad once I looked at some of these other ones, but yeah, it's tough to get information out quick when they're so close to one another. But I'm sure
like your color scheme on this chart. I thought I gave you a color scheme.
You know,
I have improved it since I last gave it to you. So,
well, you know what? You may need to give it to me again because I just started out doing like something I thought made sense. And then I
like the color because it makes it clear, you know?
Yeah. I wasn't happy, but at some point you just need to stop. I just need to stop tinkering with the board, right?
No,
there's,
you're wrong.
I had to deliver it to people.
There comes a point where you just said, but you can continue to tinker.
Cause I've got like three or four other ideas that I wanted to incorporate, but I just didn't have the time. And I figured people wanted to get this out ahead of time. And so we'll see. I mean, maybe I'll tinker a little bit more and we'll see. But like, I said, I got to stop and just stop. Like, because I was working the different color schemes and I'm like, okay, this is silly. I need to just stop tinkering and just close it up, make sure it's good, double check it, send it off. And then away we go. So that's, I think people are happy that it's available. Well, hopefully sure they're happy.
They got it.
We'll continue to make upgrades as we go and in future years as well.
All right. So that's it. That's all we're going to cover here. We have another review added and on the Apple Podcast and a couple more on Spotify. So we appreciate that. You know, we appreciate everybody listening. Do you have anything to add there, Eric?
No, happy drafting. Looking at and enjoying the draft. Don't take it too serious. Don't get, you know, just at the end of the day,
especially this year, don't take it too seriously, like, because they have a lot of need. Their team on the rise, they still have a lot of needs. It wouldn't be surprising what they take, and I don't know if you can get too upset over anybody they end up taking. I don't know. It's an interesting year.
I think the other thing that we've learned from Holmes's drafts is that they look a lot better in their totality after he's drafted, as opposed to when you're looking after at them on the fly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't understand exactly what he's doing or why he's picking a certain guy where, but after you can kind of sit back and look. And so I encourage that patience whenever,
whenever you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it'll make sense in the end. At least it has the last 2 years.
Yep. So that's it. So enjoy the draft. Don't get too upset, you know, let it all pan out, give it some time to pan out. And that's all we got. So until next time, let's go Lions.